Money FM 89.3, best of the breakfast huddle.
Elliot, I really do enjoy this moment in the week.
Yeah, where we look back at all the headlines that have come out. Some have made a larger impact than others, especially here in Singapore and around the world. And to break down some of it is Eugene Tan, Associate Professor of Law, Singapore Management University. Prof, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Elliot. I'm good. I hope Manisha and you are good too.
Yes, we really enjoy our bi-weekly catch-up session with you. So phase three, it's all about phase three this week. Education Minister Lawrence Wong, he's also co-chair of the Multi-Ministry Task Force, talked about how it might happen at the end of the year or by the end of the year. Groups of up to 8 people allowed to congregate. Now, terms and conditions apply, of course. One of it is 70% of the population needs to have Trace Together app and the token. We spoke to someone from GovTech on Monday who said that we are at about 50% of the population, more or less. Can we achieve this by the end of the year?
There's no reason why we can't, Elliot. I think, you know, the fact that we've been able to keep the numbers down, I think that would have encouraged many Singaporeans, and the prospect of more relaxation of the rules, I think, will encourage people to, you know, to keep up the sort of sacrifices and cooperation that they've been putting in. But I think it's important to remember that we're not out of the woods, and so it's important not to let the sacrifices up to this point be wasted. But I think, you know, the fact that we are on the right track puts us in a very unique position of, you know, being confident, but at the same time, you know, complacency could also set in. Mm. But I think there's no reason why the take up for the Trace Together app, for example, or Dongle, I think that's been encouraging, and I think we will get there.
Yeah, I completely agree. We are not out of the woods. I mean, there was one case, but it was in a worker's dorm, and that was, you know, often there are still asymptomatic cases out there. The others were all imported overnight. But let's talk about how much of a boost to the recovery it would be if we get to phase three by the end of the year, because obviously it means that we can see those capacity limits raised. How much of a difference does it make?
You know, Manisha, it's not going to get our economy to boom Charlie state. But I think, you know, this gradual opening up, you know, even in areas which are somewhat more prone, you know, to infections and all, you know, whether, for example, nightlife. But I think, you know, when you look at all these, you know, increasing capacity limits, I think it's a start, right? It is necessary to build confidence. It's necessary to adjust, you know, to the next normal. But it is really recovery in baby steps. I don't think, you know, we are going to see a big bang, and I don't think, you know, we're going to see the economy, you know, jumping into a full recovery mode and putting, you know, the economic blues behind us. I think that will be that will not happen for quite a while.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up nightlife, because Mr. Lawrence Wong did say that nightlife might remain closed after Singapore enters phase three of its reopening, though they are talking about having pilot trials, like what they did with the weddings, right? Increasing it from 20 to 50. There's been talk of, you know, DPM last week said that some targeted aid will be launched for nightlife. We haven't really heard anything about that. What can we expect here? I mean, a lot of them are pretty much dying where the businesses are concerned.
It's a harsh reality, and we don't know what these targeted measures are. I think in the end, you know, what really these nightlife operators are really looking at, you know, would be for them to get back into business, you know. But I think the concerns, you know, with nightlife here, we're referring to, you know, venues that provide singing, dancing. I think that there is a concern that those areas would be a lot more vulnerable to COVID-19 infections. So I think it could be measures to help them, you know, move to a new type of business or a related type of business. But the question is whether, you know, it might be a little too late. But I think in any case, right, the government will not be able to guarantee the success of the nightlife sector, you know, whether this is pre or post-COVID. And likewise, you know, even the targeted measures cannot guarantee, you know, that any switch to a new line of business or a related line of business, such as food and beverage, you know, will help these operators. So I think this is one where, you know, we will see the nightlife sector, you know, having to press on. And I think it's really tough. I can't imagine being in that sector. But one hopes that, you know, they will be able to with the government assistance, you know, be able to pull through. A good number of them will be able to pull through this difficult period.
Yeah, it's been a really tough one for them. You're quite right. And, you know, some of them have rallied together to try to support one another as well. OK, we'll talk about something slightly different here in Singapore. And this is all about the country making international headlines, actually, with efforts to go green. And I just want to put this in a little bit of context. Deputy Prime Minister Heng this week talking in the ITAP 2020 conference. And this was quite a milestone event because it was the first big hybrid MICE event. But asked about what Singapore could bring beyond manufacturing and Industry 4.0, he talked quite resolutely about sustainability. Now, all of this in the context of a story this week about households signing up for centralized cooling systems that can cut energy use by 30%. Things like this, Singapore is here to stand out in Asia, right, when it comes to sustainability.
Oh, definitely. I thought, you know, the news of a sustainable housing estate in Tengah and all, you know, certainly got me really excited. You know, the fact that, you know, we are able to roll this out on at a precinct level, you know, hopefully to an entire, you know, public housing estate level. But I think that, you know, the fact that we are now really making that determined effort in sustainability is something that COVID-19 has sort of brought to our attention. I think this is really, you know, a very good move. I think if you look at Singapore's compactness, I think we can test bait many of these sustainability solutions, you know. So I think it's really a step in the right direction. And, you know, and Celine news about solar power harvesting, and I think all these are really the effort, you know, to in a way join in, you know, what is a global concern to deal with climate change. But I think on the other hand, you know, looking at the economic dimension, I think these are solutions, you know, that will be applicable not only just in Singapore, but certainly the world over, right? So, which means that, you know, that could be a new sector for us, you know, when recovery comes, you know, we could perhaps be marketing this sort of solutions in the same way that we did, you know, with wastewater recycling, you know, new water and all that.
We're speaking with Eugene Tan, Associate Professor of Law, Singapore Management University. Let's turn our attention to something that's going to make headlines tomorrow morning for sure as we gear up to the second and final presidential debate that's happening at 9 a.m. Singapore time. U.S. President Donald Trump lagging behind the polls against Democratic challenger Joe Biden. But we're at a place now where do we really care what the polls say? Is it really accurate anymore? There's talk of, you know, the Russia and Iran obtaining U.S. voter registration data. I mean, so many issues are on the table. But if you were able to put yourself in the shoes of an American, what is the one thing that you want to get out of this debate?
That's really a tough one, Alice.
Yeah,
because we're looking at, you know, close to, what, 50 million Americans who have already cast their ballots. You know, and so the question is, you know, for the rest, you know, would be, I suppose, you know, who would I be confident, you know, putting in a, being in the White House? You know, do I want four more years of Donald Trump, or do I think that Joe Biden, you know, can make, you know, that vital difference? So there's a lot at stake, you know. So even though you have a good number of Americans that have voted, I think there's still a lot to fight for. I think polls are something which, you know, many people now take with large doses of salt, you know. I think, but certainly Donald Trump will need to do better than what he did in the first debate. I think he needs to stay muted, you know, when he needs to be. And certainly just play to his strengths, you know, and that has really been really about the economy. I think to some segments of American society is about how he has dealt with China, you know, so you might see him, you know, weigh in very heavily on these issues, but I think he needs to also pay attention to his weaknesses, you know, so that includes the pandemic response. Mm-hmm. I think he needs to assure Americans that, you know, that he knows what he's doing, and that there will be stronger measures in place, you know, to ensure that, you know, America will get out of the healthcare side of the pandemic, which will then lead to, you know, the economy opening up. But I think we can expect many, many surprises. I think he will seek to keep his base, but also, you know, make that very bold attempt you know, to reach out to undecided voters. You know, we're talking about Donald Trump, you know, so I think anything is on the table for him.
Yeah,
it feels highly emotionally charged, this whole thing. Just finally, I just wanted to ask you, though, because you alluded to it there, these early voter numbers. It's quite interesting because some people are making a big deal of it, but others are saying, don't let this fool you. Sometimes the data can be extremely imperfect. As an academic, what's your take on this?
Well, I think that, you know, the early voting numbers, you know, do suggest that people are mindful about you know, COVID-19, and so, you know, to avoid that crush on November the 3rd, you know, they are making this effort to vote early. But I think it's also being carried by the fact that there's been a lot of voter enthusiasm, right, in this particular election. So whether they're supporting President Trump or whether they think that a change has to take place, the point is, I think people are a lot more engaged. People know that, you know, this is an election with a lot at stake. And so, you know, the numbers, to me, close to 50 million, you know, doesn't mean that, you know, it's going to be Trump or Biden. Mm-hmm. But I think we will see increased turnout. I think we will see the pace, you know, to win over the hearts and minds of those who have yet to vote. I think, you know, this debate later tonight in the U.S., I think, you know, will be, you know, that last-ditch attempt, you know, by both candidates, you know, to make that final push, you know, and hope that, you know, it will be enough, you know, to help them win the election, particularly for President Trump, you know, who has been trailing.
Yeah, you know what we're all doing at 9 a.m. We've been speaking with Eugene Tan, Associate Professor of Law, Singapore Management University. The winner, the TV network, if you think about
it. Oh, yeah.
Thanks, Prof. Take care and stay safe.
Thank you.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SPH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.